My name is Tim. I get to teach here on a pretty regular basis. It's an honor, and it's good to see you all this morning. We're continuing our series on emotionally healthy spirituality. If you're a note taker in your bulletin, there's a yellow piece of paper this morning that you can kind of follow along on. On the back, I think, is the some of the scripture text for today, and then on the front, some of the questions we're going to be asking. We've been looking at emotionally healthy spirituality, and the last few weeks kind of focusing on this idea. I mean, I guess if I had to summarize it, the last few weeks, really focused on the idea of being real, authenticity in different ways. I talked about not hiding a few weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, Nina talked about our families, where we came from, interacting with that, going back, dealing with our past. And last week, Becca Johnson talked about our giftings, our unique giftings that God has given us, and embracing how God has kind of shaped us uniquely. We're going to continue today, but we're going to continue on this being real, this idea of authenticity, but the next 2 weeks are going to be some heavier topics. It's going to be a little more intense, so I'm just giving you a heads up. Some of you probably won't be your favorite, and that's okay. There's a Middle Eastern proverb that I heard once that says, "The good teacher does not hand out baskets of cucumbers, but places a peppercorn under the tongue." So here's the peppercorns. I think we'll have a fun time together. Yeah. So on that note, the two most dreaded emotions the surveys, the social scientific studies I've done, it's probably North America, but my guess is it's pretty universal. The two most dreaded feelings, the two emotions or feelings that people avoid, they despise, they stay away from, they try to get rid of more than any other two feelings. These are the two things we're going to be looking at, one this week and one next week, the two most kind of avoided emotional states in a person's life. Shame and grief. Shame, the sense, shame is the sense that if people knew me, if people really knew me, that knew what made me, you know, knew what made me different, if they knew my weaknesses and they knew my failures, if they knew the things that I messed up on, if they knew, they would not accept me. Grief, that loss, that gnawing ache, that pain that doesn't go away because it's ended, or they've passed away, or it's over, they've left. Grief. Shame and grief. The two feelings that we most dislike. These are the two things we're going to be talking about this week and next week. Shame is the one for this morning, the sense that if people really knew me, they wouldn't accept me. I don't have many memories of preschool. Some people, they remember all sorts of stuff from their childhood. You know those people? It's like, what? Did they just carry a video around with them when they were kids? I can't hardly remember anything. I know I was there. But I remember mats for nap time. I remember kind of what the outsort, like, recess area looked like. I remember we had some sort of bunny or gerbil creature that was a big deal. Those are a few of my memories from preschool. But I remember one event in particular. And it's kind of this, it's just this snapshot in my head. Because in our preschool, they had this, it was like a magazine rack, kind of, it's a bookshelf that you could kind of, the books are facing out, you can see all the covers, so the kids can see the covers of the books. You know those kind of bookshelves? Can you picture what I'm talking about? So this one, somehow, I don't know why the room was set up this way, there was space behind it, so you could kind of get in behind it, and it was kind of hidden away back there, and I have this memory of being back behind this bookshelf, crying by myself, because the other boys, there's something that happened. They didn't want to play with me, and they were laughing at me. And so I'm back there, and I'm crying by myself, because they excluded me, and somehow I was the brunt of the joke. I was funny, and so I'm back there by myself, crying. I'm 34, and even today, somehow that carries emotion with me. Shame is the sense that if people really knew me, they really knew what was going on in my life, they knew my weaknesses, my wounds, my failures, they would not accept me. They wouldn't embrace me. That's shame. And I wonder this morning, as we come here, What's going on behind your bookshelf? What's going on behind your bookshelf this morning? What's that? I mean, if we sat down and had a heart-to-heart and asked about how's things going with your parents? Or how's your parenting going? We talked about what's your thought life like this last week? What have you been saying to yourself this last week? If we had a heart-to-heart, if we talked about how are things doing financially? What's on your internet history? If we sat down and we talked about what's going on behind your bookshelf, what are those things that other people don't know about? What are you alone in? I wonder what would come up. And so as we kind of head into this topic, just reflect, what's going on behind your bookshelf this morning? Let's take that, and I want to apply scripture to this and look at what God might speak into that part of our lives. And so we're going to start this morning in 1 John 4 is where we're going to be. 1 John 4, 7. The words are actually on the back of that yellow piece of paper, or you can follow on the screen, or if you have your own Bible, all sorts of ways. John was a close friend of Jesus. He was a follower of Jesus. Spent years with him, walking roads with him, having meals with him, sharing stories with him. Knew him really well. In fact, when John starts his letter off, he says, I'm going to tell you about who I saw with my own eyes, who I touched with my own hands, who I heard with my own ears. He's like, I was with this guy. I'm going to tell you about Jesus. And John, we find when we read his letters, here's a man who was captured by the love of Jesus. And I think that'll come out as we read a little of the letter this morning. So 1 John 4, 7. We're going to read 7 through 12. He says, dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. Now I want you to listen to this next sentence carefully, because I think it's crucial. This is love. Not that we loved God. Not that we love God. Not anything we did, not anything we earned, not something we worked ourselves up to. Not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is made complete in us. Verse 10, he says, this is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us. I think this is kind of the center idea that the whole paragraph turns around. It's at the center of the paragraph. This the sense that what love is, it's demonstrating the fact that we didn't earn ourselves, we didn't earn God's love, we didn't work ourselves out. It's not something we did first, but it's his initiative to love us right where we at. That is the definition of love. And then, of course, he unpacks that. What does that mean for our relationships with one another? How do we love one another? But the center, the definition of love is how God loved us before we did anything to deserve it. This is love, that he loved us. His love makes us lovely. His love makes us worthy. It's like these babies. This is my daughter Samantha. She's 4. It's her baby. Can everybody say hi, baby? I just want to bet you all would say hi, baby, to me. This is Samantha's baby, and she's had baby since the day, I think when she was born we had baby. She has slept with baby every day of her life. She carries baby around with her when she's sad. She holds baby. She adores this thing. She cried when she sucked her thumb. She would hold baby and suck her thumb, and baby was her best friend. She loves baby. And baby's seen better days. You know, baby's arm, it's been sewn on multiple times. The arm is now disintegrated into just these fabric shreds. And she's kind of dirty, but she just loves baby. And then, now, a couple years ago, we thought we're going to be really smart parents because if we ever lose baby, we're in a lot of trouble. So we will get a backup baby. This is backup baby. This is imposter baby. Imposter baby is nice. Imposter baby is clean, pretty new. And when we try to give imposter baby to Samantha, she says, "No, I want broken baby." This is broken baby. Broken baby, Samantha loves broken baby. Imposter baby, we could just, I mean, don't even bring imposter baby near her. I mean, imposter baby, it's just like another stuffed animal in our house. They could kind of take it or leave it, but broken baby, we would go into a raging inferno for a broken baby. By the way, if you all could do me a favor and not, like, ask her about her baby all the time now, that would, she's kind of quiet that way. So, anyways, I was thinking about this, and which baby is more valuable? Who says imposter baby? Who says broken baby? Yeah? Yeah. What do you think I could get on Craigslist for broken baby? Yeah? Craigslist? You think a nickel? You think somebody would give me a nickel for that? I mean, or would they not even want to take the time to meet me at McDonald's? No. What if I paid them? Would they take broken baby? I mean, no. I mean, there's nothing about broken baby. It's not like broken baby is made of golden thread. There's a microchip in her. Or is there anything kind of like intrinsically valuable about this? No. I mean, broken baby, its value comes from it's being deeply loved. Broken baby is so valuable because she is deeply loved. And even me just telling you about her, you know, I mean, if something, like if someone came and ripped this out of my hand this morning, you would be offended. I'd be offended. No, this is a valuable thing, but it's valuable. She's valuable because she is so deeply loved, not because of something broken baby has accomplished or something it's made of or something it's done to earn Samantha's love. It's simply valuable because she's loved. I think John's kind of on to that this morning, that we are deeply valuable because we're loved. And it's not because, not like imperfect baby, because we're nice and clean and new. No, that we can be honest about the fact that our arms hanging off, because that's not where our value lies. It lies in the fact of the way God has loved us. So we're talking about shame. You know, John says, can you put that verse 4:10 up there? Let's see. This is love, not that we love God, but that he loved us. So what happens a lot of times in this world is we feel broken. And brokenness, I think there's different ways we could talk about it. The arm falling off, the hiding behind the bookshelf. Sometimes it's sin in our lives, moral failings, things that we ought to feel guilty about. Sometimes it's just weaknesses, not necessarily moral failing, but just something we failed at. Sometimes it's wounding, something that we've received from others. But it's these areas in our life that are broken that we don't want others to know about. And what can happen is that we're afraid that if we share it, we'll get rejected, which will lead to shame. So we kind of have this instinct that, you know, if I really let anybody know what's going on here, if any of you know see my arm hanging off, see what's going on behind the bookshelf, that they're not going to accept me. They won't embrace me for that, and I'll be shamed. We're terrified of this, and so we hide. We cover up our broken arm. And what happens, the irony is, we're afraid of not being accepted who we really are, and so we end up hiding so people don't even know us anyways. And I think what John's speaking into this, he says, look, it's not about who you are, what you've done. It's not about the love you've shown God. It's the simple fact, this is love. that he loved us before we did anything at all. And he didn't just, not just this abstract like idea of love, that in history, in space-time, Jesus of Nazareth came and demonstrated the love of God in his life, death, and resurrection. And I believe when this gets a hold of a person's life, it breaks into this. When the love of Jesus breaks into a person's life, it breaks this. And what happens is we realize that it's not, that my brokenness does not, with Jesus, it does not result in rejection and shame. But actually, as the love of Jesus breaks into a person's life, it creates a new root of acceptance. And worth. And I don't mean just the idea, kind of the concept of Jesus, what he did on, you know, kind of the theology of it. I mean this existential encounter, this experience in our insidest insides of Jesus' radical love, his radical acceptance, the fact that he has taken this brokenness on the cross and left it there, and he totally loves and accepts us right where we're at. And then instead of this route of rejection and shame, Jesus sets on us a new path of acceptance and worth. The gospel, John says, breaks this path that so many of us walk on. And so what happens then is that a person can become rooted in the acceptance, the love Jesus has for them, instead of this broken rejection, shame route. It's interesting, I observe kind of in the secular world, people attempt to address this, and they attempt to address it through things like the secular self-esteem movement. This idea, you know, people recognize this, and so they say, well, you know, you don't need to feel this way because everyone's special, kind of in and of themselves, and we try, you know, the world tries to address it, but that kind of secular self-esteem movement, when unhooked from the love of God, it can just devolve into forms of narcissism, that ultimately our acceptance needs to be rooted somewhere outside of ourselves, and it's rooted in the love of another for us. We are valuable, we are lovely because we are loved. Just like broken baby. And so I wonder this morning, which baby are you? Which baby do you want to be? The new, clean, put together baby that sits with the other stuffed animals, or broken baby? My arm's falling off, but I am deeply, deeply loved. Where do you see yourself this morning? Which baby are you? Now, when a person begins to get captured by this vision, when a person begins to get captured by Jesus' radical love for them, it changes the way we relate to others. And I want to look now at skipping down a paragraph. So 1 John 4, and we're just going to go down to verse 17. When a person lives in this, it changes how we relate to those around us. 1 John 4, 17. John writes, "This is how love is made complete among us, so that we will have confidence on the day of judgment. In this world, we are like Jesus. There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love." Perfect love drives out fear because fear has to do with punishment. I think we could rephrase that for this morning. Fear has to do with rejection. Perfect love drives out fear because fear has to do with rejection. And I think John's saying, look, when somebody's been captured by this, when you have been taken hold of by Jesus' radical love for you, it gives you a courage to be vulnerable, to be honest about the brokenness in our lives, in your life, so that you don't have to live in fear of rejection. It's not that how people respond to you doesn't matter to you anymore. It's not that it doesn't affect you at all, But when we're set free from our worth and value being determined by the way those around us react to us. See, if I am so secure in Jesus' radical love for me, it gives me the courage to be honest with others about where I'm really at, about what's going on behind my bookshelf, about the fact that my arm's hanging out. Because how that person responds to me, my sense of value and worth isn't dependent on how they respond. Because actually it's rooted in the love of Jesus for me. And that's secure. And see, what happens is we can get in, if we're not rooted there, we can get in a cycle. If our sense of worth and value comes from those around us, we can get in a cycle that looks something like this. We're broken. And because of that, we're afraid of how others will react to us. And so it leads to this fear. Because we're fear of rejection, fear of shame. And so because of that fear, we hide. We're afraid that we won't be accepted, we won't be valued, we won't be embraced, and so we're going to hide. But the irony then, of course, is when we hide, we're more alone, we're more desperate, we're more unknown, and it just results in more sin and brokenness in our lives, and it starts all over again. It's this cycle of enslavement, the enslaving cycle of the fear of shame. When people can get captured in this, yeah? I mean, this is real stuff. So there's a young man, and he spends Saturday night looking at porn on the internet, and he hates himself for it the next morning, but he's terrified that his friends or his parents or his family might find out, so he doesn't tell anybody, and he feels so alone and so unknown and just loathes himself. And so how does he fill that space up? He goes back and does it again. There's a young woman, and she does not like her body. Does not like what she sees in the mirror. And so she eats less, or she eats more, or she purges. And she loathes what she sees, but she can't let anybody know about it. She's terrified that her friends or her family might find out. So she stays in it alone in this pit. And so the cycle repeats itself. I mean, this is real. I mean, whole marriages can get caught in this. So she's silent and doesn't say anything because he's angry at her. And he's angry at her because she's silent and not saying anything. And neither of them can just come forward and say, I feel alone, I feel afraid, I don't know, I want to be known, but I'm really scared right now. I really feel hurt. They can't say that, and so she stays in silence, and he stays in anger. And they just repeat the cycle over and over and over again. Or families, whole families can get in this. Where they've gotten themselves into thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of credit card debt. But in their family, if they tell their siblings, I mean, what will they think? Or if their parents find out, I mean, how will they look at me? What will they say about? So we're not going to tell anybody. We're just going to keep it to ourselves. And they just get farther and farther into this spiraling hole. Or more subtle things. More subtle ways where maybe people see her as put together and competent and always on her A game. And she likes that people see her that way. But she's getting so tired and feeling so overwhelmed. But she can't say it because then people would know that weakness. They wouldn't see her in that same respect anymore. She keeps it to herself. And yet she feels more alone and more overwhelmed because of it. This enslaving cycle of the fear of shame that others won't accept me. And this isn't something that it's like we grow out of this. It's not that we escape this at some point, that it's we never have to deal with this anymore. I mean, even folks who are, they've been, maybe you've been a Christian for years and years and years and years. Maybe you're in ministry leadership positions. Maybe you're kind of, you can handle the big things in your life. And people see you as somebody, they can handle things. They're mature. And what ends up happening is we get this image that we have projected to others. I'm mature. I've got my game together. I've got my act together. I'm in leadership. You can listen to me. And because that image is out there, we don't want to show any chinks in the armor. And it's hard to say words like, I need help. I'm sorry. I messed up. And what ends up happening is the farther along in our journeys we go, there's still these places where we resist showing the chinks in our armor. We resist showing our weaknesses. And John says, there is no fear in love. That if we have been captured by the radical love of Jesus, we need not live in the enslaving cycle of the fear of shame. And he says, he invites Jesus' love to break in and sever this. That out of our brokenness, instead of living in a place of fear, that Jesus' love for us can invite us to something different. It can invite us to courage. And instead of hiding, Jesus' love can invite us to vulnerability. And instead of getting deeper into the pit of sin, Jesus' love can invite us into healing. And that in our relationships, in our friendships, with our housemates, our dorm mates, with our teammates, with our marriages, with our parents, that a new cycle of relating can begin that isn't based on fear of shame and hiding, but based on the courage of vulnerability. My arm's falling off, but I can be real about that because I know I am deeply, deeply loved. And it creates a community of grace, relationships of grace, families of grace, a different way of being. It's like light shines in. I remember the first couple years of marriage for Christy and I were pretty dark. We got in a pretty sideways pretty fast right away in our marriage, and it's a lot of fighting. Mild depression and more fighting. But we were the good Christian couple, and we're really hesitant to let others see what was going on in our marriage. And of course, that just pushed us farther and farther down into this pit together. And it wasn't until we started getting honest with those around us. I remember we were living in Denver at the time. We're at the seafood restaurant with these two really good friends of ours. They're a couple years older, and they had gone through some rough stuff in our marriage. And I remember a seafood restaurant because I would not recommend Denver for seafood restaurants. So I'm there having this like 5-day-old frozen piece of something. And they're sitting across the table, and they say, what's going on? And we're able to say, you know what, we're not doing that well. And actually, this is what's going on. We've been fighting a lot, and I'm, emotionally not in a good place. And they were able to speak words of love and support and understanding. They were able to share some of their story and pray for us, promise to keep asking us what's going on. And it wasn't until that we started doing the regular practice, we started going to different friends there in Denver and sharing, this is where we're at right now. We need you to know. We need to not be alone in this anymore. That cycle of the cycle, the enslaving cycle of the fear of shame started to get broken for our marriage. And when we practiced that courage of vulnerability, Jesus started to just bring light into our marriage. I believe Jesus desires this for every one of us, everyone here. I believe he is walking amongst us by his Spirit this morning, inviting us to know, not just in a conceptual way, but to know in the most inside parts of your heart his love for you, and to give you the courage to have those seafood restaurant conversations that we need to have. So this is what I'd like to do this morning. We're gonna take some time and give some extended space to respond to this morning. We kind of shifted the service around just so there'd be plenty of time to engage with this morning. And there's a number of different ways that I think you can respond to this. And I certainly don't want to force anything on anyone. But if you feel like you have some business with Jesus to talk about, I'd invite you to come. come forward and sit near the cross to talk to him about it. If you'd like, you're welcome to just sit where you're at. If you're if you want to just sit, and you can journal some of the answers to these questions on this yellow sheet of paper. Maybe you have someone that you need to talk to this morning who's not here, and maybe you need to sit and start to write out some notes of the conversation you need to have, or maybe you need to get up and go make a phone call before the service is even over. I'll be hanging out up front. If anybody wants to come and talk, I'd be happy to pray for you. Do we have the folks who are going to do prayer team this morning? Do we have some folks who are here who are going to do prayer team? Any hands? I don't even know who our prayer team was this morning. Yeah? Okay, there's a couple. We got a couple people in back. Kathy, would you be able to stand up and pray with people in back too? Yeah. Okay, we'll have a couple people in back if you need to just have a face-to-face conversation, have someone pray for you. There'll be a few people back there too. But our central value as a community is word made flesh. That these just aren't ideas, but that we live this out together. And so I don't know what that looks like for you this morning, but I would encourage you to respond, to have that conversation you need to have, whether with Jesus, whether with a flesh and blood person. I believe he is here. He wants every person to know his radical love, how deeply loved you are, and to give you the courage of vulnerability, that his grace would break out into your friendships, into your dorm rooms, into your families, your marriages. Yeah. I believe that is what his desire is for every person here. Will you pray with me? Jesus, you were very honest about what it means to follow you. You said at times it will feel like death. And sometimes these kind of conversations feel like death. They are, they can be terrifying. Laying things bare before you, laying things bare before another human being that we have not said to anyone, that can be very scary. And yet you also said that that kind of death leads to real life. And we believe that is true. We do not want to spend our lives in a pit, in the shadows, by ourselves, unknown. May your love, by your Spirit, encounter us this morning, this week. May it change us from the inside out, how we relate to those around us. Jesus, I pray that for every person in this room. You know their stories. In your name, amen.